Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about 1942's classic, maybe one of the best movies ever made, or the best movie of all time, Casablanca.
It's still nuts that this movie was made in 1942.
Yeah, before the war had ended.
Yeah, just after America got into the war, which can explain some of the allegory we may talk about.
But I had never seen this movie before, and I kept remarking to myself and boyfriend Jesse, I can't believe this movie got made.
Okay, so first reaction, Brother Jay, did you enjoy this movie?
It was a good movie. I don't know that it rises to the, like, be-all, end-all classic number one movie of all time, Rosebud. But, I don't know. It was good.
I enjoy this movie better than Citizen Kane. I think strictly on an enjoyment level.
I can see that, but I don't know.
Citizen Kane has some big set pieces that are really impressive. And some different camera angles and things. And this movie does not quite have that artistry, I don't think.
I didn't dislike Humphrey Bogart as much as I remembered from other movies.
You don't like Humphrey Bogart generally?
Well, I didn't have a good impression of him because I think I've only seen him in The Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, that may not be his best role.
Really not so much.
The Big Sleep is pretty good, though.
If I'm comparing the two movies, The Maltese Falcon versus this, this is by far,
it has some of the same actors.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, no, Maltese Falcon isn't, anyway, it's not nearly the quality of this movie.
But you knew a ton of the lines, right?
Oh, yeah, they're stolen and cliched in everything from here on out. Oh, yeah, no, There didn't go 5 minutes that something wasn't familiar.
Okay, what did boyfriend Jesse think of this movie?
I didn't ask him, actually, so I'll have to ask him. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
He stayed awake for it, I think.
Well, okay, here's how I sell this movie. This, especially when I first saw this movie, because I saw this movie probably maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, I didn't see it when I was a kid or anything. I don't have nostalgia like that for this movie. And yeah, you have heard, just in popular, in the popular zeitgeist, the quotes, but it's hard. I mean, I'm always impressed, and I've watched this movie now probably a dozen times. I'm always impressed how funny this movie is and how, like, heartbreaking this movie is at the same time, and how deadly serious it is. I mean, it's not
dark.
It's not Schindler's List, but it's dark. Yeah. And this movie was when it was released, we didn't even know, America generally didn't know the extent of the concentration camps to which they were speaking.
No, but they were not pulling any punches that Germany was and Hitler weren't a great thing.
Yeah, this was during World War II, but after...
Yeah. Well, World War II didn't end until, 45, so...
Nazis, such, like, what a great universal villain.
Yes.
Anytime. Anytime you need somebody just truly, truly deplorable, just bring in the Nazis.
Well, but you also had, I mean, there was some stabs at the Italians. Actually, it's funny because this is a movie, then, and we'll get into the specifics of it. But
well, they weren't very flattering of the Americans either.
Or the French.
Yeah, this is a movie that takes place in, like, basically just outside of World War II.
Or the Moroccans, for that matter.
Yeah, well, and everybody in this movie is a cynic, except for maybe Victor Laszlo. Except that the heroes, like Rick, for instance, Rick is turns out is a good guy, even though he doesn't want to be. Like, he's grudgingly a good guy.
He's trying not to be the hero.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be the hero. He doesn't want to have a heart. He doesn't want to feel. He wants to avoid feelings and responsibility.
Because he's had something bad happen to his heart.
Yeah. So, Boyfriend Jesse says, I liked it. The French cop was super funny.
Yeah. The Invisible Man. Claude Rains.
Yeah, but Peter Lorre, man. Oh, I forget how creepy he is.
Well, yeah. We'll talk about Peter Lorre. So Drew, sorry. I didn't mean to shortchange you in the opening. You and I have talked about this movie before. We recorded a whole podcast about this movie.
I was going to say, maybe Boyfriend Jesse listened to the first podcast.
Nope, that wasn't released.
Yeah. Nobody's listened to it. Yeah, the first time I watched this movie was for the podcast. But that was like two years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So now you have new, more critical eyes. What did you think about watching it this time?
I love this movie. It's great. I've only seen a handful of Humphrey Bogart movies. This one and African Queen really stand out in my mind. But yeah, this movie is fantastic. It's well paced. It's well acted. All of the characters are really well formed. Like, they don't have to spend a lot of time setting things up. Just by the way they interact with the other characters, you understand them. Like, this is just a really well-crafted movie. Even with some of the dated effects, like driving through Paris.
Or the opening, where you can tell it's a matte painting. There's no town.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, yeah, the airplanes, I thought, caught my eye, both in the opening and the ending.
Team America.
Yeah, pretty much Team America, exactly.
I know, that's my reference to everything.
Yeah.
And even though there's some melodrama, like, it's not really over the top. Like, this movie is very funny, but it is also heart-wrenching. And, like, just about everybody in it is likable, except for the Germans.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, the German officers.
Even the sketchy police lieutenant who likes to take advantage of women. Like, you can't help but like him.
Because his German staff is nice.
Well, yeah. Yeah, no, Claude Rains is, like, he's the worst. And yet, he's great. You know?
Yeah.
And I like the fact that this is, you know, the Casablanca itself in Morocco. And here, let me give us a little history lesson that this is why we didn't release this episode with Drew and I, because neither of us at the time understood the political
I still don't understand the politics of what was going on.
The first time we muddled around for like 40 minutes, and then I thought, okay, I can cut all of that out. We're bumbling around. But to find like a succinct explanation of what the politics in the area was like at the time, I was like thinking, well, okay, I can splice in like a half an hour lecture from YouTube. Like, well, I can't do that. That might actually get us in trouble. I think this takes place in 1941. And, we have Germany has just rolled into Paris, or had like a year ago or whatever. And so you have occupied France, like the Vichy government. So about half of France is directly controlled through Germany.
Was the Vichy government a puppet government, or yes. Was that the holdout government?
No, the Vichy government was the puppet government. Yeah, I think there was some of France. Yeah, this is, again, we're going to get into problems here. I think there was some of France that was directly German controlled. And then there was the Vichy government that was the public government installed by the Germans.
Okay.
And then there was unoccupied France. And unoccupied France included probably a little bit of actual France, but also a lot of the colonies, the territories. And that's what Morocco was. I think Morocco was like a Spanish colony at some time, too. And there was some fighting there. But where Casablanca was unoccupied France, and not there was no direct fighting going on. But in the very opening scene, it paints a picture of, to get out of Europe, you needed to basically get yourself to Portugal.
With the coming of the Second World War, many eyes in imprisoned Europe turned hopefully or desperately toward the freedom of the Americas. Lisbon became the great embarkation point, but not everybody could get to Lisbon directly. And so a tortuous roundabout refugee trail sprang up. Paris to Marseille. Across the Mediterranean to Oran. Then by train or auto or foot across the rim of Africa to Casablanca in French Morocco. Here, the fortunate ones, through money or influence or luck, might obtain exit visas and scurry to Lisbon, and from Lisbon to the New World. But the others wait in Casablanca, and wait, and wait, and wait.
And if you can get to Casablanca, then you can get these papers, these letters of transit to go to Portugal, and then from Portugal you go to America. And America was not involved in the war at the time.
Because I did some research, I did some history research.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make sure I knew. Because having not been alive in 1940 through 1945, there was some. I had some gaps in my knowledge, clearly.
Sure.
So, there were no such thing as papers to get out of Morocco, and had there been papers, the Germans wouldn't have honored them anyway.
But the Germans weren't in charge, right?
Correct.
No, but had the Germans been occupying and controlling Morocco, they wouldn't have honored papers anyway.
But they weren't. That's the whole point. Nobody was occupying Morocco. Morocco was still a colony, and it had a loose ties to the Vichy government, but it had its own government. So Captain Renault, Claude Rains, was pretty much the chief law enforcement officer in Casablanca.
But he still had to keep the Germans happy.
He had to keep everybody happy. He, and as he explained, at least, like, his allegiance was, you know, what Tom Lehrer would say, his allegiance was ruled by expedience. Or it went with the wind. Okay, well, let's start with the plot a little bit. So we have the film opens, and you have this whole spinning globe and a narration, and it plays the French national anthem, and it talks about how the French colony of Morocco is important because that's how you got to, that's one of the main ways you could get out of Europe. And you zoom into this bustling Casablanca market full of, you know, it's like Mos Eisley Space Station. or any place Indiana Jones went. And you get kind of, you know, the whole feel of, like, the pickpocket character is great. Like, that kind of gave you a feel. And how people get stuck. I mean, even in the beginning, it says, you know, people go to Casablanca to wait for their papers to get out and wait and wait and wait. Because, you know, that's the place where, and you know, the whole thing about how people are selling their diamonds and, like, there's a glut on the diamond market.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a sad thing. But this all, also, there's a MacGuffin of some German officers have been murdered. They had been, the German officers that were carrying these letters of transit.
Yeah, these get out of town tickets.
Yeah. And so the German officers are coming in to find the murderer of these other German officers. That's where Major Strasser, who comes in as the main German bad guy, he's there to catch the murderer, sort of. He's got another agenda, too. So papers to get out of Casablanca are very, very important, and everybody's trying to get out. So that's a main point of tension. And so the Germans come in, and we get to meet Captain Renault. Again, it's Claude Rains, who's great. Because, yeah, Captain Renault only is after himself. And he's got these buffoonish, like, underlings, including the Italian guy who's kind of bumbling, which is, again, kind of a joke. And we have people from all over Europe.
And Renault is super corrupt.
Super corrupt and super charming.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not even hiding it. Well, and even, okay, so we have the Renault character, Claude Rains, but we also have, going back and forth between sources here.
That's okay. I will interrupt with more histories. During the 1940s, Morocco was under the control of France, and from 40 to 44, the Vichy government aligned with Nazi Germany.
Yes.
King Mohammed V remained the ceremonial head of state and did whatever he could in his power to protect all the citizens of Morocco. At this time, Morocco had more Jewish citizens than any other Muslim-majority country, totaling over 300,000. The Vichy Nazis government had demanded from the Sultan a list of all the Jews in the country, and his response was, quote, "We have no Jews in Morocco, only Moroccan citizens."
Yeah, that's pretty great. So, okay, let me just give some of the characters here. So we have Major Heinrich Strasser, who is Conrad Veidt. Turns out people who played Nazis during World War II, actors who played Nazis during World War II, you know, in America, you know, that's sort of a risky role to play. Okay, so we have the characters. We have so the major bad guy is the German major, played by Conrad Veidt. But then we have Signor Ferrari, who owns the Blue Parrot, who is a self-described head of all criminal activity in Casablanca.
Which is substantial, because it seems like the entire economy is a black market.
Yes. And it's played by Sidney Greenstreet, who is hilarious. And I'm sure that him... at the end of basically all of his scenes, like slapping flies with the fly swatter, that had to have been his choice, because it just made me smile every time he did it. And then we have Ugarte, played by Peter Lorre. And yeah, Peter Lorre manages to be the skeeviest guy ever. Maybe it's because he is very slight and has a very he's got a very specific German accent. And also, have you ever seen the movie M? Have you guys seen M?
No.
It's a German language movie, Fritz Lang, I think. And Peter Lorre's, spoiler, the bad guy. Yeah, he's creepy. He's just creepy anyway. Plus, I know Peter Lorre being creepy because, you know, anybody would do a Peter Lorre voice, or you hear old-time radio Peter Lorre as the creepy voice, who's kind of equivalent to Boris Karloff, where you could recognize his voice. And also Herb Shaylin would do a Peter Lorre impression from time to time.
I just kept thinking he was squiggy.
He had a little bit of, David Landers to him, yes. Yes, but he never went to Rick's place saying, hello.
Because it would have been more like, hello.
He's like, hello, Rick. oh, you're very nice. Anyway, sorry. So...
What, did you slip into Chinese mode?
Nah, I think, yeah, something Filipino, maybe.
Okay. All right. Tagalog. This is the cultural sensitivity episode.
Well, I'm not saying these are great impressions. Yeah, so we have Peter Lorre as the skeevy bad guy, who turns out to have the papers. He is the murderer, right? Or if he's not the murderer, he has the papers that the murderer got.
he was involved.
I believe he's the murderer, because he starts just wildly shooting people.
Well, there is that. Yeah, we were going to talk about that. But then we have other notable characters. Is Sam, the culturally relevant Sam, piano player played by Dooley Wilson, who is great.
I love Sam.
Me too. He gets so much, his character is so much better than you expect it to be.
Yes. He's a really good friend.
Yeah. And a good guy, and he's always, yeah, he is a good friend. He's a good, he's looking out for everybody. Between Sam and also Carl, who is one of the employees of Cafe American. And actually with the Russian bartender, too, is kind of hilarious. Because, no, I mean, everybody is in Casablanca kind of by accident, it seems. Well, first of all,
it's kind of a refugee stop.
Yeah, we don't even know Rick's backstory, right? I mean, Rick is not allowed back in America for some reason that's never explained.
He seems to be some kind of war profiteer.
Well, he's described as running weapons into basically the losing side in a couple of it seems like maybe the Spanish Civil War, maybe in Africa or something too. But yeah, a couple of different things. So yeah, he's kind of, but it seems like he's on the good guy's side of these
perhaps
wars.
He's a spy.
No, I didn't get the idea that he's a spy. But remember, he's American, but as an American, and again, this is, again, I think, allegory, America did not want to be involved in World War II. The only reason America got into World War II is pretty much because of Pearl Harbor. Lots of isolationists. So Rick starts out as a pretty much an isolationist. He doesn't stick his neck out for anybody. That's one of the hallmarks of Rick. He's kind of a straight shooter, and he runs his little saloon. And you know, we are shocked to find out there's gambling.
Here are your winnings.
Yes. Can we all admit that Rick is like the coolest guy ever?
Well,
in the beginning of the movie,
perhaps, because he's chain smoking and drinking almost constantly.
Yeah, that's just vices of the day. But it seems like there's no one cooler than Rick. No?
I don't know what scale you're gauging that on.
Yeah, he's the guy that everybody wants to hang out with, but he plays hard to get.
Yeah, he doesn't hang out with anybody.
Everybody wants to be at his place.
Yeah.
And have a drink with him, and he will not drink with anybody.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe like the character, not necessarily the actor Humphrey Bogart, maybe the character Humphrey Bogart. You know, he's a guy that every man wants to be and every woman wants to be with, and yet unattainable.
So Peter Falk in Murder by Death was doing Humphrey Bogart, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Because that was my baseline for this performance.
Well, you know, okay, so Grandpa Clyde had a picture of Humphrey Bogart, one of the famous Hollywood pictures of Humphrey Bogart in his house. And that whole aesthetic, you know, like some people of that era had sort of like the Frank Sinatra, you know, Dean Martin Rat Pack kind of, they appreciated that aesthetic. But I think Grandpa Clyde appreciated the Bogart aesthetic a little bit more.
Oh, because he was actually kind of a ladies' man.
Yeah, he was the cool guy.
And he was living the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Drinking, smoking, banging chicks, being the center of attention.
Sure.
Everybody liked him.
I mean, you know, he had like a trophy
carefully
girlfriend.
Through these next few moments.
No, I'm not going to mention names of people we actually know. I'm just saying that.
I thought you were going to start talking about how Bogart was known to be like a human tripod.
Well, that may be the case, too. But again, who knows? Oh, and, you know, okay, how tall was Humphrey Bogart?
I learned
Bogart?
Something new. Which part?
He was 5'4".
He was not 5'4".
I don't know. Why are you asking me that?
Because I was going to mention that the one thing about Peter Lorre is he made Bogey look like he was 6'3".
Just FYI, you're super overdriven. So
sorry. Okay, I'm excited.
No, I'm just saying.
Do 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 do
You know, I gotta say, I got real tired of that song.
I didn't. I loved all the different ways they arranged it and kind of snuck it into the score.
Yeah,
that was great.
The only song or music I didn't like in this movie. I even like that Knock on Wood song. The only song I didn't like was that flamenco guitar lady.
Oh,
I could have done without her.
Nah, she didn't bother.
With the warble?
Eh, she's fine. Yeah, I just said, I'm not going to buy the soundtrack if she's the predominant part of it. But I listen to honky-tonk sort of saloon piano all day long.
He was 5'8".
Okay, yeah. How tall was Peter Lorre?
5'4".
5'3".
Yeah, yes. Okay. How tall was Claude Rains?
He's 6'2".
5'7".
How about Paul Heinrich? Victor Laszlo?
6'3".
Okay, yeah. See, that makes sense.
Ingrid Bergman was 5'9".
So Ingrid Bergman was taller than Humphrey Bogart.
They put Humphrey Bogart on a box or something totally, for all of the scenes then.
Yeah, that's the impression I got. The Bogey wasn't super tall. He was no Peter Lorre, but he wasn't super tall.
Tom Cruise, man.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing wrong with that.
Oh. Boy. Huh. Paul Henry died at age 84.
Wow.
In 92.
If we get back to the plot here, because it's so much fun. I really like this movie a lot. And this is a play before it was a movie, right?
Couldn't have been one for very long.
No. But yeah. But I think it was developed as a play first. But okay, so here we have this the scene of a foreign land of crazy black markets and all sorts of criminal behavior. And we have these people that are waiting to get out, these kindly European people of all countries. Then we have Rick, who owns this saloon. And everybody knows Rick, and everybody goes to Rick's. That's the thing. And the competing place is the Blue Parrot. And we have Sidney Greenstreet, who's trying to buy Rick's from him. And they seem to get in on the same black market shipments of things.
They have a friendly cheating rivalry.
Yeah.
But their supply chain is the same.
Yeah, it seems like everybody has a very friendly rivalry in this movie.
Well, because they all kind of have this gentleman's agreement that they got to all keep it under wraps or they're all going to end up in the pokey.
Yeah. Well,
and worse, because the Germans will just come and shoot them.
Pokey is the concentration camp. Or dead.
The concentration camp, by the way, which they really understate in the movie.
I'm telling you, they didn't understand what the concentration camps were at that point.
No, I understand. I'm just saying the point was they made like some country club that he got sent to for a little while, and then he got out of.
Oh, but yeah, okay. Well, we're gonna get there. So we go to Rick's and see the nightclub casino. We have Sam playing the piano. It's all very festive. We've got everybody in Rick's though is making a deal with somebody.
I love that Sam just moves his piano wherever.
Yes, exactly. So we have Ugarte, who comes to Rick and says, hey, he's got these letters. And by the way, can you hold them for me? And Rick understands why he wants that done, but he doesn't want to be caught with these letters either. So he agrees. But again, he's got to figure out the angles himself.
Rick says repeatedly, in a manner in which you never believe him, that he sticks his neck out for nobody.
Yes. Yeah, always. Yeah, he's constantly sticking his neck out, as it turns out.
He's very unconvincing.
Yeah.
Especially because he contradicts his actions constantly.
And Rick is something of a ladies' man, but not in a noble way, that's for sure, because we meet Yvonne, who Rick has had some sort of relationship, but doesn't want to anymore. And it seems like he and Renault have both had really, Yvonne seems to be a known quantity in Casablanca, let's say.
Indeed.
Yeah. So Louis, the captain of the Casablanca police or whatever, he knows that the murderer is going to be in Rick's, and he just decided to do the arrest at Rick's. So he's posted two guys at every door. so that it goes smoothly, because he wants to put on a little bit of a show for the Germans while giving the Germans their prisoner. What doesn't go so swimmingly, though, is when they arrest Ugarte without the papers, because Rick is holding them, he decides to make a break for it, including shooting wildly into the club itself. He is, though, taken without being shot himself, although we never see him again, and as it's explained later,
nope,
they haven't decided yet in the official report whether he killed himself or died in custody. Doesn't seem to be that big a deal. It's just understood that he did not make it.
So he would have fit right in a New York nightclub in, like, 2010, just shooting around in a nightclub wildly.
In a New York nightclub? Okay, hold on. New York nightclub in 2010?
It's somewhere in there.
Okay, all right. I don't get it. I can see the Pulse nightclub in Orlando in 2016. So we've got Ugarte, who's been arrested, and everything goes back to normal, sort of. But then we have a customer, a person coming into Casablanca who the Germans are also very interested in. And this is basically one of the major leaders of the French Revolution, or the underground...
La Résistance.
Yes, exactly. And that's Victor Laszlo. And Victor Laszlo is a guy who Rick has heard of. Everybody has heard of Victor Laszlo. Victor Laszlo is a very important guy to the resistance. And the Germans, because this is not this is unoccupied France or whatever, the Germans can't just take him. There has to be some sort of semblance of legal reason why he's in custody. But what they can do is they can make it so he doesn't get out of France or get out of Casablanca and to America. Like, ideally, they want him dead or back in a concentration camp, because that's where he escaped from. But at least through whatever force they have, they want to keep him from getting to America legally or at all. And he feels safe enough to be out in public, because, again, he's not, you know, this isn't Germany. They can't just take him off the street. And, like, Renault has to kind of split the difference.
How much authority the Germans have is was never really clear to me.
Yeah, it seems like they don't have any direct authority. But because eventually Renault answers to the Vichy government, they have some influence. But he is still his own, you know, he's still the law, at least on paper. And he's taking full advantage of that. And he realizes that it won't necessarily last forever. So Victor Laszlo shows up, but Victor Laszlo also shows up with a lady, a quite beautiful lady, played by Ingrid Bergman. Her name is Ilsa, and she's Norwegian, and she is Victor Laszlo's wife. But she knows Rick. Rick knows her. Because as we find out a year or so before, Rick fell in love with Ilsa in Paris just before the Nazis came into town.
You should have just let it go.
I know. I was waiting.
I beat you to it.
Yeah, you did.
I don't get it.
So we flash back to Paris, and Rick has fallen in love with Ilsa, and Ilsa has fallen in love with Rick, and they both talk about they don't want to know about each other's past, so they've agreed not to talk about each other's past, but they're madly in love, and they're making all these plans, and we find out through exposition later that basically Ilsa met Victor Laszlo, married Victor Laszlo. Victor Laszlo was arrested and taken to a concentration camp from which he was not expected to ever return.
Oh, it was reported he was dead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Several times.
Okay. So, you know, it's all clean hands, sort of. Unfortunately for Rick, on the day where they're making preparations to take off from Paris together and maybe even get married and go to America, or I guess maybe not America because Rick can't go back to America, but whatever, Ilsa finds out that her husband is still very much alive. And you could tell in the days or so before they'd make their escape, she knows this and Bogey does not. And so in a very, I don't know, I think very touching scene, you can see that this is how Rick's heart was broken, and he has not recovered from this. And seeing her again, it makes him a very angry, bitter guy.
But rips the scab off and pours lemon juice and salt right in there.
And he reacts to it in a very, like, bitter, angry way, which is, you know, seems appropriate. Not heroic necessarily, but appropriate.
Seems reasonable. Seems like reasonable behavior.
Yeah, it does. But by a very broken guy. So, and seeing her just makes it all worse. And Sam is trying to make everything, but, you know, kind of field the emotions between them. Because everybody likes Sam, and Sam was there in Paris.
He's just doing what he's told.
Well, other than the fact that they keep calling him a boy.
Boy.
Which, yeah, that's the only part that distant rings probably true, but also, you know, through 2018 eyes, it's sort of hard. But, yeah, Sam is Rick's friend, and Sam knows how heartbroken Rick is. In fact, he knows not to play that song.
He's been told.
And so, you know, we have that famous line about, that never was spoken, about play it again, Sam.
Well, she says play it again.
Yeah, but nobody ever says play it again, Sam.
Right.
Yeah.
But I thought that Bogart's portrayal just before the flashback and just after the flashback, where he's drunk and he's bitter and he's sad, is great. I thought that was actually fantastic. Great performance.
His performance throughout the movie was great.
Yeah. And the movie doesn't have a particularly Hollywood ending. Because you have, at this point, we've got the conflict is that Laszlo and Ilsa need to get out on these papers that Rick has. And Rick doesn't want Ilsa to go. He's punishing her. But he also knows that Laszlo is a very important guy, and as much as Rick doesn't want to necessarily stick his neck out for anybody or show allegiance to any particular cause, Laszlo is leading a cause he believes in, and he thinks Laszlo still needs to do what Laszlo needs to do.
Well, and he's always been a fan and helper of the underdog.
Exactly. And Laszlo, it turns out, it is not charismatic in the way that Renault or Rick is, but Laszlo turns out to be a good guy.
Yeah, there's nothing, even though he's sort of Rick's rival, there's nothing nefarious about him.
Yeah. And even when it becomes clear that he has realized that he is Rick's rival, he does the good guy thing. Like in the end, he's like, look, there, you know, if you can't help me, then at least help her get out. And I'd rather have the two of you take these papers out than for her not to get out. So while her goal is to get Laszlo out no matter what, for political reasons and also because she loves him, Laszlo also is like, no, you're more important than even my cause. So Laszlo's a good guy.
Vive la resistance.
Yeah, well, which, you know, again, makes it harder for Rick, because Rick is punishing Ilsa by saying, no, you're not getting out on these papers. You could offer me 2 million francs, but you're not going to get them. She even threatens him with a gun, and he's like, you know what? Go ahead.
He's like, shoot me.
Yeah. Yeah, get me out of my misery. This will solve my problem here if you shoot me. But she can't do
also,
it.
Also, not get you out of Morocco if you shoot me.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, yes. So, we think that Rick is going to... He has now engineered this thing and tells Renault, because the Germans end up getting Laszlo arrested, and Rick conspires with Renault to get Laszlo released and then arrested for a much more serious crime, so that Renault can actually be in the good favor of the Germans that way. Because Renault doesn't get much out of helping the little Germans. But if it was some sort of big spectacular thing where he ended up capturing Laszlo for some permanent reason, I guess he can make use of that for his own political gain.
Yeah, and this is where the politics was kind of baffling, because the Germans really wanted Laszlo, and it seemed like the Germans were a big deal. But somehow they didn't really have the authority in Casablanca, so they were putting sort of pressure on the local government to do something about Laszlo, but they couldn't themselves. But they were the ultimate sort of master.
Yeah. Well, except that, yeah, so there's, we learned more, and not flatteringly, about Renault. One of the things Renault does is Renault gives out exit visas to people, especially attractive women and their husbands. If the attractive women and their attractive women puts out, and at one point where this underage girl asks Rick for his help, he asks her something if she's supposed to meet with Renault, and she goes, yes, me and my husband. And he's like, oh, well, Louis's more open-minded than I thought he was, which is pretty hilarious. But yeah, so Renault is taking advantage of women. And Rick, I guess, doesn't approve of it at a certain point. Like, he knows it's happening, and he can't really prevent it, like on a big level. But in the one instance where, of course, he doesn't put out his neck for anybody, and this underage girl is going to sleep with Renault so that she and her husband can get her exit visa, but is asking his advice as a man, like, what would my husband think of me if he ever found out that I did this? And because it parallels Rick's life about how, you know, Ilsa left him, blah, 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 you know, does love win? That's where we find out that Rick can rig his roulette table.
22.
Yes.
Two Choo Twain.
So despite himself, Rick seems to be a good guy. And at the end, when we think that he's going to get on a plane with Ilsa, he says, no, you have to go with your husband. And of course, the line is cliche now. About how, you know, what's the exact words? The
maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow.
Well, more like the lives of three people don't really matter.
Ilsa, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world.
And if she doesn't go, yes, she will regret it.
And the names are Mr. and Mrs. Victor Laszlo.
But why my name, Richard?
Because you're getting on that plane.
I don't understand. What about you?
I'm staying here with him till the plane gets safely away.
No, Richard, no. What has happened to you? Last night
you said... Last night we said a great many things. You said I was to do the thinking for both of us. Well, I've done a lot of it since then. It all adds up to one thing. You're getting on that plane with Victor where you belong.
But, Richard, no,
Now, you've got to listen to me. You have any idea what you'd have to look forward to if you stayed here? 9 chances out of 10, we'd both wind up at a concentration camp. Isn't that true, Louis?
I'm afraid, Major Strauss, I would insist.
You're saying this only to make me go.
I'm saying it because it's true. Inside of us, we both know you belong with Victor. You're part of his work, the thing that keeps him going. If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life.
And so he does the noble thing and gives these letters to Laszlo and Ilsa and send them on their way. And Strasser ends up and Rick ends up shooting him. And at the end... You know, now Strasser's been killed, so things aren't going to go swimmingly for either Louis or Rick, because Louis's going to keep Rick's secret as far as him shooting the German. So they decide they're going to go head out and have further adventures.
I want to see those adventures.
They made those adventures. I think it was a TV show in the 50s.
Oh, nah, I probably don't want to see those adventures.
I'm guessing. But wouldn't those be fun adventures? I mean, they're going to go to Brazzaville or whatever in Africa and maybe work for the resistance, maybe do their own shenanigans. You know, they have something in common. They're both kind of rogues.
Just the good old boys, never meaning no harm.
Yes. And they were making their way the only way they knew how, but that was a little bit more than the Third Reich would allow. You say that as if there's going to be another Reich. But I don't know.
The dialogue in this movie was great.
Wasn't it?
It was very quippy. They had a lot of quippy good lines.
Yeah, in lesser hands, that could have gotten really annoying, but Rick was so good.
There was a chilling line that was, I think, perhaps awfully precognitive, where they were talking about how the Germans would come in and everybody would die. And he says, even the Germans can't kill that quickly.
No, there's lots of digs on Germans. There's also, you know, I love the whole thing about rounding up double the usual number of suspects. It's just, there's so many things about this movie.
They'll round up all the suspicious characters.
Yeah, well, but at the end, it's like, pick up the usual suspects. But I think because this is a movie from 1942 that everybody has seen and everybody knows and everybody loves, I think I was probably resistant to watching it at first. But this movie, to me, is a 100% recommend forever. I know you guys tried to talk me out of and maybe successfully talked me out of my love for Chinatown. But I absolutely love this movie. It's got everything. Now, oddly, I was looking at the calendar. I'm sorry. We're not done. But do we really want to go to Notorious next week? Like, we can, but...
We could do Jodorowsky's Dune next week.
If you like, we could do that, yeah. Drew?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
All right, yeah. Let's. I'll let you switch up the calendar.
Yeah, I've had a week off of Dune. We should do it.
Oh, at least we can finish up Dune. Hey, let me tell you. This I'll remember 2018 as the year that I hated and loved and did the Dune.
I looked up the cover art for God Emperor of Dune. Holy crap. It looked amazing.
Because he's half man, half worm.
Yeah, like giant.
Yeah.
Like slug, like if Jabba the Hutt and the Sphinx had a baby.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Also, every time he said it, I could not get that Nine Inch Nails song out of my head.
What said what?
God Money.
Okay. All right.
I'll send it to you.
Okay. So back to Casablanca.
Yes.
Jason, you had more notes?
No.
Okay. What would you give it as a grade?
I'd give it an A for how well it holds up. I mean, that alone is a significant marker of, you know, how well crafted and how well written it is and well acted. So even though it's a little corny and cliche, it's only cliche because it's been ripped off by everything. So,
and it's corny, but not, it never, to me at least, it never rises to the level of like actually being corny. It just approaches corniness.
It doesn't end up being like a yuck yuck movie.
Yeah. Drew, what's your impression? Was it worth it?
This movie's totally worth it. I am a little embarrassed that it took me until my late 30s to watch it. And I may have seen it when I was much, much younger and just didn't remember. But it's hard to tell because it is so familiar. I mean, it is such a heavily referenced movie that I don't think I'd seen it before, but I couldn't say that for sure. But it's great. All the performances are great. It's so well written. It's the whole movie is really well put together. It's paced perfectly. You know, I sometimes worry about that with older movies, about them being slow. And they took advantage of, I guess maybe that's not the right way to put it, but this is a black and white movie that was fun to watch in black and white because they really played with that. They shot some of the scenes like almost in like negative space where you're watching action just in the shadows.
Well, yeah, this was an era where that, well, I think maybe were there color movies at this point? In 42? Yeah. But I mean, they really know, directors knew how to direct black and white movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, this is a joy to watch. I would watch this again.
I'd watch it again tonight. And yeah, I think the pacing is one of the really great things about it. There's so much, you know, this could be all a big melodrama. It could be all a big romance, but there's so much, I guess levity is a strong word, but there's so many quips and funny asides, even if it's a black comedy, that that it makes it everything makes it move along.
So there were color films before, but not a lot. Although 26 had quite a few, 27. So it wasn't rare, but black and white versus color seemed to be probably about equal. My guess is that production costs were higher on color. Although this movie had almost $1 million in production cost.
Oh, but it shows. It's so, I mean, the sets are great. The lighting is great. So anyway, Casablanca, thank you guys for watching it. It's probably one of my favorite movies ever.
Wake up, Dougie. I think I got something to say to you.
No, you know what you should do? Go to YouTube and look up the band The Men That Will Not Be Blamed for Nothing, and listen to the song "This House Is Not Haunted." Don't watch the video at first. I would recommend you'll get a better experience if you just listen to the song without watching the video first.
Here, let me show you round. This is the bath where the toddler drowned. This is the nursery where the twins were found. And this is the beam where they cut her down. Speaking as an atheist, God and Satan don't exist. And if there is no afterlife, there can't be ghosts or poltergeists. This house is not haunted.
It wasn't here in the broad daylight.
This house is not haunted.
Because if you watch the video, it has its own thing going on, which I think is pretty great. But I think you get a different experience if you just watch the video.
I didn't watch the video.
Okay. Well, then I recommend you watch the video. If nothing else, to see Dougie's, one of his favorites, Andrew O'Neill, play guitar and sing in this song. At least sing backup.
I won't hold it against Dougie. I hold it against you.
By the way, I would liken my reaction to listening to This House Is Not Haunted. I think the feeling, the bit of Our Old Bliss I got was like the first time I heard the typo negative version of Summer Breeze. I think that I also think the song is very clever, as well as being like it strikes maybe a literal chord. It gives me what I want as far as that kind of rock music, and it's kind of a building ballady kind of thing. Not ballad, more like just it has a building quality to it. But it's also great. It just, like, summer breeze makes me feel fine. Also, it's the same to me, completely different genre, but the same as Never Gonna Come Back Down by BT.
We are here to save the Earth.
A lot of the Dandy Warhol hits that I got went into a Dandy Warhol hole, because I don't like every song on every album, but the Dandy Warhol songs that I like, I really like.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, This House Is Not Haunted is on Apple Music.
Yes. Go for
it. So I don't even have to pull up a YouTube video and then not watch it.
Sweet. But I do recommend that you watch up the video, or watch a video if you like the song. But based on that song, I bought that album and I bought the newest album, because, you know, support the arts.
So in a little bit of housekeeping, the first thing I ever supported on Kickstarter, I finally got.
Oh, cool.
It's only 2 years late.
Sweet. Uh-huh. What was that?
But it showed up.
Were they earphones?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
I remember you talking about
them. And they're
them.
Like, yeah. Hand, are they like somehow molded to your body, or they're just...
Yeah, they have these earpieces that you mold to your ears, and then it sends a current through them to harden them so that they're custom fit.
Have you checked them out yet?
No. No, I haven't had time, but they look cool.
Sweet.
But
yeah,
Kickstarter green is what.
Very
this,
nice.
This run was made in.
What's the brand?
Revolves.
Ah, okay, cool.
But they were it took them so long. They were bought by Logitech.
Oh. Well, there you go.
So they're a Logitech company now.
I just put money into my first Kickstarter campaign item. So,
oh, what'd you put your money into?
The total revamped entire Myst collection.
Sweet. That sounds fun. I've backed like a half a dozen to Kickstarter things. One of which I've never received, actually. And it was a guy who is based in Anchorage.
Oh, so you took the money and run?
I think so. It was 2013.
Oh, is that the smart mouse guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Nope. 2013, December was when we were supposed to get it. Yeah, he's had some problems. He hasn't actually updated in more than a year, I think. So I think the money is just gone.
The Myst 25th anniversary collection, they wanted a $250,000 goal. which it was funded in 8 hours. They're currently at 1.6 million pledge.
What is their, what kind of stretch goals do they have? What do you, like what do you get if you back them at a reasonable level?
Let's see, at a reasonable level of like $50.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
reasonable. You get all of the games redone, updated for Windows 10 or Mac OS, in downloadable online versions through Steam.
So that's Myst and Riven. And what else is in there?
Myst 3, Myst 4, Myst 5, Uru, and Real Myst.
Oh, I didn't know those other things existed.
So
I think Real Myst was my second favorite flavor of blonde soda.
So yeah, so I'm excited for it. Jesse looked at me like I had lost my mind and I was crazy. He's like, "You're paying for what?" I'm like, "Just don't worry about it."
It's just okay.
My childhood.
Yeah. Speaking of my childhood, I backed two different things that involved pretty much primarily resin and plastic paintable miniatures. So it turns out have a couple $100 in plastic miniatures that I might paint someday, maybe, or maybe not. But it scratched that nostalgic urge and won't give me lead poisoning.
I've backed almost 20 things.
Oh, good for you.
Wow.
Well, I know you backed that one thing where you got the cello song out of it, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's David Cross's David Chen.
David Chen. Yeah.
David Cross.
Well.
Have you guys heard of Songfinch?
No. Is it a person or a thing?
It's a thing. It's essentially commissioning your own song,
like pieces, parts, or
no? Like you say, I want a song in this style, about this subject, and here are all the details I want you to have in it, and then a songwriter makes you a song in that style.
And you have the rights to it?
You have the rights to it as long as you don't use it for any money-making purpose.
Okay. So we could commission a song as a podcast theme.
That's what I was thinking, actually.
Yeah. I'd contribute money to that. Yeah. Let's do it. How much does a song cost?
You can use a pre-existing template for $100, or you can do one totally from scratch for $200.
I think that's doable. Yeah. That sounds exciting. I
got a song for Jennifer for her birthday through that.
Cool. How long
is it? She dug it. I don't know, three and a half minutes.
That's amazing. Okay, now I'm fascinated. What's your initial vision of what a Not in a Creepy Way theme, what genre would it be in?
Hip-hop?
No, that's a totally valid question. Because I could see it be anything from like a hair metal ballad. I think we can kill Jason. I can totally see it being like electronica, and I don't mean like good electronica. I'm thinking of like Ross with his Casio keyboard and vocoder, like electronica too.
Aspirated Fresca, you bastard.
I don't think sorry, I had that one ready to go because the genres aren't that diverse. There's like sort of like acoustic pop, singer-songwriter, country, or hip-hop. Maybe it's even hip-hop / dance. I don't think there was like a rock option.
Like you couldn't do a punk grunge option?
I don't remember that being an option.
So it's kind of like a songify. It's kind of like a songify thing then.
Maybe.
What's songify?
Songify is you you record a phrase or a series of phrases and Songify makes it into some strange rap or pop song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
not quite like that.
The Hide Your Kid, Hide Your Wife.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Bedroom Intruder there you song.
Go. Oh,
that's a Songify.
Ain't Nobody Got Time For It?
Yes.
I love that.
Ain't Nobody Got Time For That.
I love that song. I would actually buy that song as a single. Well, I woke up to go give me a cold pop. Then I thought somebody was barbecuing. I said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire. Then I ran out. I didn't grab no shoes or nothing, Jesus. I'm running for my life. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that.
It's available.
Is it?
Are you kidding?
Well, okay. Do you remember Nicholas Megalus? What was the big? He was like a Vine superstar. Hold on.
Having never used Vine, I got no point.
Vine were these like 7-second videos.
No, I know of it. I just
and he would do these. And I know I bought his single, but because it was like he took not just the little 7-second thing, but he had to incorporate a whole bunch of other references, and so I didn't think it worked as well. I think it's is it Gummy Money? Yo, my name is Nicholas, and this is ridiculous. Got mad gummy money, and it is delicious. Yo, my name is Nicholas, and this is ridiculous. Got mad gummy money, and it is delicious. Yo, my name is Nicholas. Hold on. Gummy Money. Yes, it is Gummy Money. That's all. I could listen to 3 minutes of just that.
Why?
Because it's funny.
Okay.
Hold on. Hand sanitize. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.